What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks in 7 with Ryan Payton.
Okay, welcome back to Pucks in 7. Here's a question as I bring in my guest. What happens when hockey and fashion collide? I don't know the answer, but this lady does to my left, right, depending upon where you look at the screen. Annie O'D, Cherry Bomb Hockey Podcast. Fashion and NHL are your thing. You and I connected last week. Pretty fast turnaround. Yeah. It's good to see you and nice to have you on the show.
No, thank you for having me, Ryan. I'm so excited.
So much to get into with you. We'll talk hockey on the ice, different things. And I also kind of briefed you a bit on the 77 seconds thing that we're going to do. So 7 seconds, no timer. Don't worry about it. It's totally fine. I think I put 8 questions in, actually. So if you get the first few wrong, then I just end the show. I'm just kidding. No, I just don't end the show. We're good. We'll go into that later on to end the show. Let's begin, though, with, again, I'm fascinated by what you do. I love what you do. This is different for me to talk to somebody like you. Number one, we'll get into hockey, too, in just a second, all the stuff on the ice. But this whole fashion thing. So where did this start with you? What was there a moment in time you thought, you know what, I'm going to post this or I'm going to do this and I'm going to make something of this?
You know, I started making just hockey content in general, started just before COVID hit, actually. And because I just love talking sports, specifically hockey. But fashion's always been a passion and a love of mine, and always love, you know, different ways to whether it's like a game day outfit, or I also collect vintage jerseys. So yeah. I just think jerseys and any sport jersey, but hockey jerseys specifically are just such a versatile and one of the most beautiful pieces of fashion there is. Quite, maybe that's a little
there's
controversial.
There's one right here. There's an old one right here, a vintage one. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's just so much to do with it, and so much story, so much just history behind each one. I just think that's part of fashion too, is that, you know, fashion has evolved just from years and generations, and it's reflective of, you know, our society and things. It goes so deep, as does sports. So I, you know, when it came to making content and trying to do different things, I kind of took the concept of, you know, make the content that you want to see, make the content you genuinely enjoy making and something that you're passionate about. Otherwise, you're not going to stick with it. And I think that's transferable to anything.
Yeah.
So I got that started. You know, I think it started pretty, you know, pretty fan centric with, you know, ranking reverse retro jerseys, thoughts on those. And, you know, once the WAG playoff jackets started to take really steam, it came to those things. And, you know, it's funny enough, you know, this season, now that there's no dress code. So you get to see a little, which I think is, despite what many, many of my comments say, which is bring back the suits, bring back the dress code, which I would say a good 75% of the league still wears their suits. And
I agree.
They should. These guys, I mean, think about it. They come into the league and they probably think, I need some good suits to travel, you know, and pay a pretty penny for them. I'm going to wear them too. I don't blame them. But it is fun to see, you know, a lot bit more of these players' personalities come out with the way they dress. And I figure, we'll do a quick little video series on that, on quick thoughts on it. We won't harp too much. We won't spend too much time on each, because at the end of the day, these guys are walking into the rink. I think these guys spend all of their commute there and back into the locker room in them.
Yeah.
So, you know, as far as functionality goes and things, you know, don't think too much into it, but just kind of a quick rapid fire thing. And it has really taken off, which is really fun to see. And not something I really didn't expect. I just thought, hey, I'll make this kind of quick, fun video and see what happens. And a lot of people enjoy it. So I've always tried to find kind of the sweet spot of, you know, hockey and pop culture, hockey and, you know, kind of blending it with something more fun. I also love rock and roll. So I've done videos on like teams as dad rock bands and things like that. So I always try to make sports fun, but also, you know, have knowledge and reasoning behind it. Cause I am, you know, a student of the game. I'm learning how to play right now. I love watching hockey. So yeah, I wanted to get into that too.
I'll get into that with you in just a bit. You know what? It's great about what you do. And just was thinking off the top of my head as you were answering that question. The NHL for a long time was dull. And what I mean by that is kind of off the ice, right? The NBA has been for a long, much longer, this personality you see with the fashion and everybody dressing up and walking in the tunnel into the room and all that. But the NHL, you know, didn't have this and didn't have that. They never had the cameras really following all the players coming in, say, on a Saturday night. Hockey Night in Canada, for example, I'm in Toronto, so Hockey Night in Canada's been a staple. But now I love what the league is doing and the players have embraced it. And that is so important because not only do you have the fact that these are the best players in the game, in the world, but you've got these young kids looking at them and I guarantee you they're picking up some style points, probably. I am.
No, for sure. And I think for the longest time, you know, I think any hockey fan has kind of had the critique of the NHL that the NHL does not know how to market these players.
Hockey players
are boring, that they don't have personality. Which it's, I mean, granted, like, especially in hockey where, you know, think about it, you're sent away at such a young age to play junior hockey and that's just your culture and your personality for so long. So I can see where people would think that kind of, you know, it's kind of like they come off a conveyor belt at times, but then you get your rare, you know, little personalities here and there, but you have to create avenues and you have to create spaces and not only, you know, spaces where they're comfortable for them to showcase their personalities. Right. It's not just like, you know, obviously social media is really big and a lot of teams are doing the fun questions and things, but it's not just like shoving a mic in their face and asking, you know, questions as they come off the ice for practice or during media day, you know, allowing no dress code is honestly a very safe way to allow them to show their personality and to, you know, freely express themselves. And a lot of, you know, guys are taking advantage of it. You know, some are going as far as hiring stylists and upgrading the wardrobe. I mean, Mikhail Sergachev is out here just, I was always, my vote for best dress.
You're a big fan of his. I confess.
Listen, for the longest time, I always thought Patrick Laine was the best dressed.
Turtleneck things, right?
The suits. I mean, the fact that he got married over the summer and he wore a pink suit to his rehearsal dinner. And it looked so good though.
Yeah.
What man would wear a pink suit to his rehearsal dinner?
Gotta be confident. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I remember him.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I remember him when he was, it was the beginning of last season when he was injured. And so the game one in Montreal in the home opener and the camera went to the players that weren't playing and weren't able to dress and whatever. And everybody gave him such a huge ovation because they loved the guy and they wanted to see him back on the ice healthy. I can't remember exactly the suit that he was wearing. I know he had the turtleneck on, but he had this, I think, orange toque or some sort of toque on, which I thought that to me, I don't know what it is, but it struck me that here is somebody, again, going back to what you're saying about the pink suit, so confident in themselves. And I think that goes a long way. And I don't know, just telling us all like fans kind of what these guys are like on the ice and even off the ice.
No, for sure. And, you know, you kind of see even the simpler side of it. Some of these guys look like they're showing up to play a round of golf look like they're working in a, you know, for a startup sometimes with just the pants and the polo shirt, which, listen, you know. Not my style specifically, but who am I? If your priority is comfort, I think it was Jason Kelsey that kind of said because he New Heights, they were talking about a game day fit, which Travis goes all out and has all the suits and stuff. And Jason shows up in jeans and flip flops. He's like, what am I going to do with a game day fit? Like, I'm just showing up to play football. So many people have that mentality too. And it's great, you know, to each their own, but it's also a fun way for fans to further connect in the game. And like we've been saying, just kind of see a little bit more of their personality.
Have you had a lot of feedback from the players themselves on things you've done?
I do know that the players love the fit reviews. I do have confirmation of that. I have confirmation that the teams do, the league does, which is great because, you know, sometimes when you, like for me, you know, I'm independent, so not tied to a media company or anything. Yeah. So I kind of feel very free to talk about things. And sometimes, you know, I talk about things without the care of, you know, what higher contingencies are going to think, which sometimes angers some of the bigger bodies here, like the Winter Classic and the way it's marketed and certain decisions that are made there.
Yeah.
So the fact that the league is on board with something I'm doing, I'm like, okay, I'll take it. This is a win.
That's good. That's good feedback. Absolutely good feedback.
Yeah.
I went in through kind of your posts and things, and there's so many questions I have from all of them, which we'll get into. But let's begin, first of all, when we talk hockey. So let's get that. We'll dive back into fashion later on, too.
Yeah.
You're in Anaheim. So the Ducks, one of the great stories this season. I have been pulling for teams like Anaheim, Chicago, San Jose, all these young clubs that have been struggling. But they've been able, because they've been struggling, the good part about that is you draft well, and they got Celebrini, you got Leo Carlson in Anaheim, you have Connor Bedard in Chicago. All three of them are playing extraordinarily well. Your thoughts on the team, where they're at now, and it seems to me, and you probably agree, they're trending in the right direction.
Absolutely. I mean, I think kind of going into last year, you know, the thought was, hey, we have all this young talent. We see, you know, everyone's talking about the Anaheim prospect pool, all these, you know, shiny new toys that are coming in. When are they going to take the next step? Yeah. And everyone was hoping for it to be last year to see some progress, maybe not playoffs, but trending closer. And, you know, there was watching last season was just super frustrating because you could see the talent there, but there were pieces that were just not clicking. It was, and, you know, I do think a big part of it, I hate blaming the guy while he's not in the job anymore, but you could definitely tell that, you know, the coaching style was a huge part of it.
Yeah,
so
100%.
It's one of those things where you have to say, okay, you know, you've got all these young guys here and you're getting, which mind you, Anaheim's also an organization going back to like Bob Murray, where stories were not quick to get out of the Anaheim front office. It was always very, you know, when trades were happening, you know, the Elliot Friedmans, the LeBruns, they weren't getting tips and insider stuff on it. So the fact that stuff was leaking out was telling me, I'm like, okay, like this is, something's not right here. There's some truth to the fact that players aren't happy with the coaching regime in the locker room. And then, you know, you go into, you know, last summer where obviously Pat Verbeek put his balls on the table, made a huge, probably the ballsiest coaching change that, which quite frankly, I think a majority of teams would have done if they had the guts to do it. You know, and hiring the best coaching candidate available in Joel Quenneville, and it's paying off tremendously already. And as you know, you kind of look at the young talent, part of that was also Trevor Zegras and saying, hey, he's a guy who struggled under Greg Cronin clearly, and they didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. You know, the guy would make a mistake and then he was benched right away. And of course, he gets traded, of course, to Philadelphia. But you know, it's tough when fan favorites get traded, but you know, if you're Pat Verbeek, you have to think you have all these young guys that you're gonna that are upcoming RFAs. Yeah, the cap is going up, but you also have to think money-wise, like, you know, behind, you have Leo Carlson at your top center, you have Mason McTavish at second, you know, Trevor Zegras. You want to be paying your third line center that much money. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It didn't make sense to me at the time, even though, hey, the trade, I didn't exactly like it, but you have to believe that, you know, there's a plan in place. But
it's a business. And that's an example of the NHL being a business. Joel Quenneville, I had this discussion the other day with somebody. And they called me out on it. I said, no, I think that he is the best coach for that team. And he said, hold on a second. The guy's 67. I think he's 67. Anyway, he's older. But I just think that there's something about him. Again, you said if Verbeek put his balls on the table to make that type of move. But I just think maybe this is all also helping Quenneville in a way, coaching some younger players, maybe changing some of his tactics or whatever. I think he's maybe changing a bit into more of a player's coach now. Not saying Quenneville wasn't before, but I think this is helping Quenneville out as much as it's helping the players out too, I think.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think it's the perfect market for him to come back into. And
you
harp on kind of the timing of when he came into Chicago and kind of the parallels that were there and what he was able to get out of the young guys then. And yeah, he's been, I mean, I think a lot of people were harping on the fact that he was out of the game for so long. People were acting like he's out of the game for 10 years. I was like, okay, it wasn't that long. Like he's still watching the games. He's paying attention, but you know, he would not have coming back into a market like Anaheim where, hey, the fans, they're great. They're passionate. The fans here love their hockey, but it's not Toronto. It's not Montreal. It's not Boston. You're not under the microscope of the littlest slip up where every move is watched. And you have a team of talent, potential young talent. You have some veteran presence there. You know, you're not in a Pittsburgh situation where you're trying to just squeeze as much, as much life out of an aging core as much as you. I tell people all the time, I was like, Kyle Dubas's job is the last job I would want. Last GM jobs I would want in this league. No. Maybe Buffalo's there too, but Pittsburgh. Yeah.
If they call me, I'll pass. Thanks. I'll pass.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, I do think that, you know, you kind of have all this talent here. It's a great way for him to step back into the game, and he's clearly having a lot of success with it. Just telling the guys to play hard and play their game and putting the young guys in situations where they can succeed. And I think that's the biggest difference between the likes of Greg Cronin and a guy like Joel Quenneville is, you know, the young guys are going on the ice knowing that their coach trusts them. Their coach trusts them to make the right plays and trust them in high pressure situations.
There was a moment, and I've talked about this a few times, I think it was the second weekend of the season in Montreal. The Canadians were getting set. I forget who they were playing, but it was about to go to 3-on-3 overtime. And the camera picked up Martin St. Louis, the head coach, talking to Lane Hutson, Cole Caulfield, and Nick Suzuki. And I looked at the camera shot, and I thought, something's off. What was off was that St. Louis wasn't even talking. The mouth wasn't moving. He was listening. And after the game, and that struck me, I thought, what is going on? That's odd. After the game, to each of them said, St. Louis asked them, what do you think the game plan should be? What do you guys want to have happen in overtime? And they ended up winning the game. And I thought, that is what coaching is to me. When you have a young league now, for example, in Anaheim, young players, and you have Coach Q on the bench who's been around a long time, give them the opportunity to say, hey, here's what I think we should do, because that to me will bode well. If it doesn't happen that game, I think that'll bode well for the team down the road.
Totally. And I think that also proves that, hey, it's not an age thing. Yeah, Marty St. Louis is a lot younger. And a lot of people were saying, like, oh, maybe Anaheim needs a younger coach like a St. Louis. It's not an age thing. It's a coaching style thing. And obviously, Quenneville's, you know, he's not new to allowing feedback from putting his players in those positions where they can offer feedback. I mean, he doesn't let Jonathan Toews be the captain of the Chicago Blackhawks at his young age if he didn't believe in that. So obviously, we're seeing it now. I mean, Connor Bedard, Macklin Celebrini, both getting hat tricks the other night. They're atop the scoring race. Leo Carlson's not behind. The future is now. The youth is thriving. I mean, Hockey Canada is allowing Matthew Schaefer to potentially be on Team Canada for the Olympics.
He's 18.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you don't invite him to orientation camp before he even plays an NHL game. I understand that. But now you've got Macklin's. I mean, I think it would be a mistake to not have Macklin Celebrini and Connor Bedard on your Olympic roster.
But I agree.
That's an American's opinion on that.
No, hey, with a Canadian, I'm totally with you. And I'm a firm believer now with the way the game is being played. And whenever you talk about a Schaefer and a Celebrini, Bedard, I've seen articles recently. And one of the questions is, well, lack of experience. And I thought, you know what? It doesn't matter to me. If there's any age bracket with the talent that they have that I think would benefit a lot from that, and if they make a mistake, whatever, I just think you got to put these guys in that situation, because talent wise, they're some of the best in the league right now. So I'm with you. Totally want those players to get on that team. You mentioned, go ahead.
I was going to say, I just feel like a lot of coaches, I kind of say that, you know, they all want to be the Herb Brooks, be like, I'm not looking for the best players. I'm looking for the right ones. So,
come on.
I mean, you saw it in, you know, what Team Canada World Juniors when they left the likes of Beckett Seneca home from the World Juniors. You saw it in Four Nations when, listen, Chris Kreider's a Duck now and he's great, but like you took the likes of Chris Kreider and Vinny Trocheck over and Tage Thompson and Cole Caulfield and Clayton Keller were left home. Like, it's just one of those things where you're like, what are you doing? Like, I get it. You want to build all four lines, but build all four lines with great players.
Yeah. I'm all for the Four Nations. I want to see it again and again and again. I am, as time goes on, Annie, I'm more against isn't the right word, but I'm not as intrigued with the All-Star game. I would much rather see something like the Four Nations replace the All-Star game. I don't think the skills competition is anything to even watch anymore. Where do you stand on that?
Absolutely. 1,000%. I've never been big on All-Star games. Never have. I mean, Major League Baseball, I think has it right. The Home Run Derby is the only thing I care about as far as All-Star games go.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell you the last time I watched a Pro Bowl. Couldn't tell NBA All-Star game. No, thank you. They try, and the league is trying, and I respect that with the skills competition, but I think the one in Florida was really the kind of the breaking point where everyone was saying, what are we doing? And it's so funny because I remember, you know, back years, maybe it's because this was kind of newer, but I love, you know, it was the Montreal All-Star game where, you know, that's the breakaway challenge where Ovi and Gino did the little with the hat and the water bottle. And Kane doing the super cane, the Superman on the ice. And, you know, Corey Perry pulling out the mini stick and things like maybe it was because it was back then, but it was like, it was fun then. And then, but I think now it's just made for TV, I almost want to say, but it doesn't seem like the players have a stake in it either. No. I mean, look at the Nikita Kucherov in Toronto whole thing.
Right.
But, and I applaud them trying to get creative with it. Like McDavid was a part of, I think the Toronto one where they were making up some of the skills and putting some money on the line too, where players would have a little bit more skin in the game. But the fact is you can't compare or compete with playing for your country. It's just, there's, it will never, never, ever match up to it. So you also have the guys, like, think about it. You're going sometime, like, would you rather have the week off, the week or two off, or go, depending on where the All-Star game is, would you rather go somewhere you don't want to go? Like the time, who was it? I'm trying to remember. Who's the guy? I'm blanking on the player's name and who it was. I think he was on Seattle, but he was going to go to San Diego. And he got voted to the All-Star game.
I'm blanking too.
Which was in Toronto, and he's like, oh.
Yeah, great. He had everything all planned. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, yeah, I'd much rather not do that. I have plans already, but now you have to go because you got to represent the team.
Cancel the Airbnb reservation.
Oh, I forget the name of it. It's going to bug me now, and I don't want to look it up because then we'll lose traction with what we're doing. Anyway, it'll come to me. A couple more things, and then we'll get into 77 seconds. You mentioned Toronto. I'm in Toronto, and of course it's different, whatever. And I'm kind of tired of the narrative of, oh, there's so much pressure. Yes, there's so much pressure. There's pressure in every of the 32 teams in the league. I understand. It's magnified more so in different cities. Totally get it. Is what is going on in Toronto right now all because they don't have 16, they don't have Mitch Marner still there, or is this a much deeper issue?
I don't think it's because of Mitch. I think it's deeper. I really, it's a team thing at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to blame. I don't think it would be fair to blame everything on Mitch Marner.
Right. They clearly miss him, but the way, like I've been looking at, I mean, I watch a lot of their games, watch a lot of the games in general, but a lot of their games and they just don't seem to have any of the intensity on the ice compared to say in Anaheim or San Jose, all these younger, they just don't seem to have the want or the need and even the heart to even play. And that's tough to watch.
It's one of those things where it's still early. So like look at Edmonton. Edmonton always, they trip out of the starting gate all the time. And look at them. They've been in the cup final the last 2 years. But it's also one of those things where you say, you know, you don't want to discount the beginning of the season because now we're a quarter of the way in. Hard to believe we're a quarter of the way in already. But, you know, come time in late March, early April, you know, when you're chasing for seeding, fighting to the death for a wild card spot, you're going to look back at those October, November games and say, would have really liked 2 points back in back in that late October game. Would have really
you can't get a playoff spot in October, but you can lose one. I always say that. And
that's a good thing. That's
go
true.
Back to October and then in November. Boy, those 2, 4, 6, 8 points that we could have had, now we're chasing by 2, 4, 6, 8 points, right? So okay, let me get into a few more of these things with you. So goalie fights. You want to see more goalie fights. Yes?
How about more? I want to see one.
Okay.
Give me one.
So I did some research, and I don't know if you knew this, but I didn't know this until I looked into it. Since 1954, there have been 43 recorded goalie fights. That's it. So that's like 0.6 a year, which equates to really nothing. I'm with you with it. I'm not saying you guys have to fight all the time, but if you make the effort enough to go across center and you go down to the at least referees
at least skate to center ice. Come on.
Yeah. Like, let them have a go. Let them have they're the most padded players on the ice. I mean, I know, understand goalies are important. So too are the players, but I'm with you. I don't want to see fights all the time, but if they want to go, I think you should let them.
No, completely. I one of my favorites is there was even an almost moment, but it was still, even though they didn't fight, it was also like the build up and the suspension was great. It was Kings Ducks in Anaheim and John Gibson, because you know obviously once you skate past you know the skate past center ice is when you're into trouble with the refs. But he just skates over. There's a whole debacle going on, and then John Gibson just skates to the skates to center ice. He just shrugs, and all of a sudden madness. It's just like that little move, that little notion of something. Hey, I'm here. You want to go? kind of thing. But I get it. I see the, you know, I understand from the ref standpoint, you want to control the game. You don't want to let things get out of control. You obviously don't want people to get hurt. Right. I respect that. I understand that. But I also, listen, I'm an agent for chaos here. I want to see a little bit of fun. Like, I still love Brent Johnson, you know, stalking Rick DiPietro. It's still one of my favorites.
That's part of your thing. Agent for, I love that. Agent for disaster. You also talked to in some of your posts about the original six teams. Mm-hmm. And that you're kind of, I don't know if the right word is tired, but, you know, enough of this kind of original six, whatever it is, the big hoopla around it. Can you share your thoughts on that?
Listen, I respect the history of the game. My dad is a huge Montreal Canadiens fan.
Oh, so fantastic. There we go.
I have been ingrained in the respect for the original six. But when I get somebody that was born in 1995 talking to me about original six, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear
down.
It. Literally, I was like, buddy, how many teams were in the league when you were born? Like, listen, my dad was one that went to the old Chicago Stadium when there were only six teams. He was waiting outside Madison Square Garden for Jean Beliveau's autograph back when he was a kid. Like, he lived the original six era. And that's a reason. He's from New York. He's from Long Island. Okay. So everyone asks, oh, why aren't you an Islanders fan? He's like, they weren't around when I was a kid. And he didn't like the Rangers. So I also feel my hot take is, especially with the Winter Classic jerseys that were just released.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
The original six teams get a lot of leeway with jerseys because, oh, they're classic. Oh, they're timeless. Like, they don't have to do too much. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel the Rangers led into with their jersey. I know they had their centennial one, but there was just so little effort in that. I'm so bored and tired of it. And the Red Wings redeemed themselves with their centennial jerseys. Those are great.
Yep.
And they've had some great outdoor game jerseys. Their reverse retro jerseys were bland, but whatever about those.
Right.
I will say the Boston Bruins have done a great job with their outdoor game jerseys. I think they've had some of the best, but for the most part, the original six teams kind of rely on this tradition, and they put on that old eggshell kind of white, vintage white, make it felt, and put on the brown pads and gloves, and they call it a day. And it's a look. I confess, it's a look. But as somebody that loves, you know, obviously I'm born in the 90s. I love color. I love, I'm a maximalist. I'm the opposite of a minimalist. I want to see something cool here. So you're
not kind of the keep it simple principle. You're more of let's jazz this thing up, right?
Let's jazz it up. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And listen, there's some things the Montreal jersey is perfect. Don't touch it. There's certain jerseys like, hey, crystal clear, don't touch the, as far as, you know, standard home and away jerseys.
Yeah.
I respect it. But like, if you get special edition ones, a third jersey, like special event ones, have fun. Yeah. I mean, it's your time to have, it's your creative, to have some you get creative freedom within, I know, obviously certain, you know, restricted areas with Fanatics in the league and all that, but have some fun with it. That's why
Spruce
I love. Yeah, exactly.
Last one before we get to 77 seconds. You mentioned about jerseys and you have a ton, I assume. Do you know how many you have? Do you know the total number?
Oh, I haven't counted in a minute.
Okay, roundabout, guesstimate?
At least 50.
At least 50. Okay. You got an Avalanche one recently or something like that?
I did. I got they sent me one of their heritage jerseys, one of the Quebec Nordiques one, which is great. There's a hot... I understand where people kind of say, you know, there's the whole argument about, you know, the team, you stripped a city of their team, like, and now you're trying to profit off of them. Like the same thing with the Carolina Hurricanes and the Hartford Whalers. And I would feel the same way. I would feel the same way about, you know, if the Utah Mammoth one day decided to do Arizona Coyotes jerseys or Phoenix Coyotes, preferably.
Right.
But I look at that jersey. I'm like, it is cool, though. I confess. And I understand the argument, and I understand, especially if those fans of those teams feeling, you know, disrespected and salty about it, but the jersey's nice.
I'm 100% agree with that. I've taken a ton of your time. I'm gonna end it with this, so here we go. Rapid fire 77 seconds with Annie.
All right.
Here we go. We touched on this a tiny bit, but not much. Better dressed league, and put your biases aside because of what you do, the NHL or the NBA?
NBA.
Okay. What is Bill Belichick doing?
Going in adult co-ed cheer competitions. That's what he's doing.
I'm looking, I'm saying, Bill, he came off the field, I think, last weekend or this week or something, and
yeah,
barely shook hand. I just, you know, and all of his girl, anyway, I don't know.
I want to know what his kid, he's got grown kids. I want to know what they have what to do say they think? About this. It's I can't ridiculous. Wait for the tell-all from the kids.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. No, it's going to be a must-read, must-listen to. If you could tell, you may not be able to answer this, but I'll try it anyway.
Okay.
If you could tell one NHL player, what the heck are you doing with your style, who would it be?
With your style, like fashion?
Yeah, like as okay. In, you need to really change top to bottom and everything in between.
Oh, Nate Schmidt, please. Oh.
Not good?
Everything.
Okay. Do the Ducks make the playoffs?
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a sower are you?
Sower? Oh, I just started.
I know.
So.
That's why I asked. How's it coming?
It's going. It's. I'm learning a lot. I'm self-taught too. So okay. I would give myself a 2-3. I think I'm inching up as I'm getting better as I'm practicing. Okay. I'm only making stuff for myself. I would never sell things
not yet.
Now or give it to anybody else. Right. But
you just wait. You just wait. Exactly. Maybe that'll happen. Exactly. Maybe that'll happen. We talked about jerseys. You mentioned the Avalanche. Favorite one that you own?
Favorite one that I own. Yeah. I own a Mighty Ducks of Anaheim road white Peter Sikora jersey. Oh, it is my favorite.
Love it. How many arenas have you been to?
The most recent one I knocked off was the Bell Center, which is my favorite.
Which is outstanding.
Far.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. The hot dogs there. Insane. Oh, yeah. I had no idea. Until
I was there twice last year. So just a side note. Twice last year and in the press box because we're doing work and in the intermission you get to go down to like this room and I hadn't been to the Bell Center before and I was told you have to get their hot dogs and I said really? I said oh whatever fine. I think I downed three of them. I felt sick the rest of the game but it was totally worth it.
I had two and I was like well the guy the buddy I was with he was like well, I said I don't need two. I just need one. It's like no you need two. Here you go. You're gonna want two at least.
Oh I know. Right.
I'm glad I had two.
Speaking of two more, what is one or two arenas that you are next on the bucket list that you really want to go and watch a game in?
Oh, let's see.
Have you been to Vegas?
I have been to Vegas. That's a good time.
That's something else. Yeah.
I would love to go to Toronto.
Yep.
And if I can, I mean, this year I'd love to see the Saddle Dome before they tear it down.
No, agreed. So, yep.
That's on my list.
We'll try to get you to Toronto. We'll see what I can do.
All right.
Last one. You skied. Again, I think this is true. You skied for the first time at Deer Valley last year. Is that correct?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
What is harder, skating or skiing?
Oh. You know, I was surprised how transferable they are.
Okay.
Kind of just knowing your edges and things. It's tough to say because I'm not, you know, learning. I didn't learn how to, I mean, I obviously brushed up on a lot of skills learning how to play hockey, but I grew up kind of skating, doing public skate, just my brothers all playing.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go skiing. Skiing is very difficult. And I was shocked how difficult it was.
Yeah. Have you been back since? Have you skied since?
I have not, but I will be going back this winter. So I'm very excited to spruce up for my second time, which will probably be not much improved, but it'll be a good time.
It's like sewing. Just take one thing at a time, right? You're going to get there on a scale of 1 to 10.
True.
Annie, this has been fun. Again, we connected last week, and I'd love to do this again. I appreciate your time. And, keep on doing what you're doing because I love the whole niche thing that you got going. And, just talk hockey with you too has been awesome. So thanks again for this.
No, this was awesome, Ryan. Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.